107.5 FM, W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Frustrated crowds gathering across Israel, calling on Benjamin Netanyahu's government to do more to bring the remaining hostages home. In Jerusalem, ABC's Jordana Miller.
After seeing American pressure and more than nearly a year of war, Israelis, I think, after the execution of these six hostages, it's been a kind of tipping point. And now Israelis are so angry, they're taking to the streets, and they simply don't believe that anything else will make a difference, except maybe hundreds of thousands of people in the streets every day.
Funeral services were held today for murdered hostage Hirsch Goldberg Polin, whose parents had worked to keep his story in the public eye since last October. President Biden and Vice President Harris will be marching together in Pittsburgh's Labor Day parade today. It'll be their first joint appearance since they appeared together at the convention. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Democratic nominee for Vice President Tim Walz campaigning in Milwaukee today. Senator Elizabeth Warren spent last week campaigning for the Harris-Walz ticket in Wisconsin. She says she supports Kamala Harris's plan to lower consumer prices by targeting corporate price gouging.
When they increase their profits by 448%, if your profits went up by that much, it's price gouging.
Warren on WISN-TV's Upfront yesterday. President Biden travels to southwest Wisconsin on Thursday. He's expected to talk about the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act. Meanwhile, Donald Trump will hold a campaign rally in central Wisconsin on Saturday. Trump campaign says it will happen at the airport in Mosinee starting at 1 in the afternoon. This is Civic Media News. An initiative called the United Vision Project connects people with conflicting political views. As Eric Tegedoff reports, the goal is to help heal the country's democracy.
The United Vision Project facilitates meaningful conversations between people with differing views. It started in 2020 and has since reached a 500,000 people in 12 states. Nancy Pellegano says volunteers are trained in the authentic relational conversations technique.
I do not argue with people. I don't tell people they are wrong. I don't judge. I have a conversation. I listen.
Pellegano says she joined the project 4 years ago because of the divisive rhetoric she'd been hearing since Barack Obama's presidency. She wanted to learn what was dividing people and find a way to connect with them on a deeper level to help heal the country. The program has volunteers, but it also finds people who may be secluded, such as those in rural areas. Pellegano says many people simply don't feel heard. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
The Brewers' winning streak is over. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports. It took 11 innings, but the Cincinnati Reds took down the Brewers 4-3 on Sunday thanks to a walk-off single. Still, the Brewers took 3 of 4 games from the Reds and stand 9 games ahead of the Chicago Cubs in the NL Central. Now, Milwaukee comes home to take on the St. Louis Cardinals on Monday afternoon in a 3-game series. The NFL season kicks off this week. The Green Bay Packers play the Philadelphia Eagles Friday night in Brazil. The Packers matchup has plenty of intrigue, as both teams have new defensive coordinators and running backs for this season. Wisconsin Badgers trailed early in the fourth quarter, but got two late touchdowns to give the Badgers a 28-14 win over Western Michigan on Friday. Now the Badgers take on FCS foe South Dakota this Saturday at Camp Randall Stadium with a 2:30 kickoff. And this week is the start of conference season in high school football. You can find one of nearly a dozen games around the state right here on Civic Media. And with sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
It is going to be a really nice Labor Day today. Mostly sunny, 74 this afternoon. The wind out of the south at only around 5. Tonight, clear, 52. Tomorrow, sunshine, 76. Then on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high right around 80. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Are you ready to start a meaningful career in healthcare? Are you looking for a job that fits your work-life balance? Become a certified direct care professional today and make life better for older adults or people with a disability. Wish Caregiver Careers makes it easy. With free online training plus earn a $500 bonus. See your name on Wisconsin's Certified Direct Care Registry. Sign up today at WiscCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous, unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm in my new time slot from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and we'll be doing my show from Madison, where joining me in studio will be award-winning filmmaker and record producer Wendy Schneider.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to a pre-recorded interview from August 6th. Enjoy.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Jessica Plotkin-Sell on the board in for Calvin, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, you can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very excited to be joined by our next guest. It is Farm Worker Appreciation Day, and he is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Darren Von Ruden. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for joining us, Darren. We really wanted to talk about this. I saw this article. You had spoken to WPR about the lack of a farm bill, and we're not anywhere closer to a farm bill than we were 6 months ago, are we?
No, we're not. Certainly with the election process going on right now, our elected officials in Washington, D.C. that are supposed to be doing their job are really not doing their job. There's been enough discussion over the years that, you know, we should be able to get it to the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate and get it to the president's desk for a signature a little bit faster than what we are. In decades past, it seems like the Farm Bill has not been as bipartisan as it is today. There's been a lot of work across the aisles to make it happen when it needs to happen. But the political atmosphere that we're in today is making things much more difficult.
Darren, one of the things that, is made very clear in that article is, you know, I think if you ask most Americans who know nothing or don't work on farms, they think it's the farm bill. So they're going to be talking about farm subsidies and farmer type things, and they'll make their accusations and whatever. But the farm bill is far bigger and more encompassing than we even know. It includes a lot of programs. Can you speak on that, please?
Yeah, sure. Certainly, the nutrition title is the biggest part of the Farm Bill, and that includes your school lunch programs, your daycare center programs, your institutional programs that provide food, and of course, then there's the food stamp part of that process too. But, you know, it really affects a larger chunk of the American public than we want to think it does. Certainly, you know, the majority of the titles are dealing with farm commodities, insurance programs for crops and things like that. But the biggest chunk of the money actually goes to making sure that those food items are in the, you know, the schools, the childcare centers, things like that.
And we spoke with Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, Darren, a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about this as well. And I asked her, I said, are farmers resentful of these nutritional assistance programs? And she said, no.
Yeah, you know, and I think there's quite a few farmers that actually have been closely touched by that because of the economy on most farms and smaller farms, especially. There isn't a lot of money there. So they probably use the WIC program. They probably use the reduced school lunch programs, and And then certainly, you know, sometimes might even have to depend on those food assistance programs that are there as part of the farm bill. So, you know, I think the vast majority of farmers certainly are not, you know, as rural America is changing because we're seeing more and more folks that don't work on farms living in rural America. That dynamic changes because we're just interviewing more people that aren't necessarily farmers themselves.
In the article, sir, the, you know, it was made very clear that we were supposed to have a farm bill last year. And then they said farm bill next year, which is now 2024. And as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot going on. I mean, the election alone is enough to stop a lot of things, and not to mention the fact that Congress isn't even in Congress right now. You, as the president of the Farmers Union of Wisconsin, what are your steps then next to, is it flying to Washington, meeting with representatives, talking to people, like, you know, that you've got a vested interest. This is important to have. And as you just said, it involves all of us. What are your steps that you need to do to try to get this done and not just kick down the lane for another 6 months to a year?
Yeah, so, you know, right now, as you said, they're not in session, so they're back in their districts. And, you know, we've got members that are meeting with our elected officials throughout the state, you know, when they're back home here, trying to persuade them to do what's right with that program. And so certainly you don't have to be a farmer to do it. You know, anybody that eats food really should be concerned about the farm bill, because it ultimately affects you know, what the pay prices are that farmers receive, which keeps them in business, but it also does affect what that overall price for the food that we eat is too. So, you know, that can happen in September when they come back in session. A lot of the farm groups are going to be doing some fly-in type activities where we'll go to DC and actually meet with them in their offices. And I would imagine the farm bill is probably going to be the, you know, number one item that most of the farm groups are talking about, because if we can't get them to move it through the proper procedures to get it to the president, get signed, we certainly need to look at an extension, because there's a lot of dollars that are in line that will go through the appropriations process. And if that isn't completed, you know, we could look at huge amounts of reduction in farm bill expenditures next year then.
If you're just joining us, Darren Von Rudin is our guest. He's the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. It is Farm Worker Appreciation Day, and we're talking about the languishing farm bill that, for whatever reason, they just can't seem to get any work done on it. I can't imagine how frustrating it is, Darren, for your members when they do talk to their to our lawmakers about why they can't seem to get this done. What kind of excuses do they provide?
Well, mainly it's the other side's fault. So just depending on which office you're in, you know, it's either the Democrats' fault or else it's
lovely.
The Republicans' fault. And so, you know, it's not taking the responsibility for their own actions.
Right.
And as a farmer and farm communities that have that good work ethic, when the cows need to milk, when the calf pens need to be cleaned, or the barnyards need to be cleaned off, we go at it and we get it done. And yeah. So, you know, we're expecting that same atmosphere from our elected officials, but certainly have not been seeing it.
I can't imagine the level of frustration, as you pointed out, Darren, the amount of work that farmers do and the dedication and perseverance it requires. And then you go visit somebody in their big fancy schmancy office, and for whatever reason, they just can't seem to get anything done.
Yeah. It's real frustrating. I know, we'll have a few good meetings every year that kind of we can focus on that. Hey, maybe if they can just get going, something we can do, we can have a good year end here. But then you always think about the offices where, you know, that nothing's going to happen coming out of that office. And that's just a real frustration that we, you know, as Americans, we shouldn't have to deal with that, because we have the ability to get stuff done if we really want to. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we need to look at that in the election box. You know, if our elected officials are not doing their jobs, we should try to find somebody else.
Yep, time to go.
Yeah,
time to go.
And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the show. And, you know, Pat talks to Hans Breitenmoser, and as Jane mentioned, Pam Jahnke, is that you have all these politicians of both sides of the aisle who stand on a podium in front of a cornfield and say how important the farmer is to America. And really, they have their jacket off and their tie undone, and they're with the people. And then they get on their get in their car, get back in the plane, go to Washington, and they don't help the people who, I mean, the backbone of our is agriculture. And I don't even know how you square with that. And I think you honestly, Darren, I think you answered the question already, or my frustration, which is, at the end of the day, you got to get up, put your boots on, go work, and do it again.
And get it
and
done.
That's what you need to do. And it's so admirable. And that's why we want to highlight voices like yours, because those politicians love to tell you how great you are, but folks, they're not getting those things done. And those things affect you as well, not just the farmers.
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit, Darren, about the dairy revitalization plan. What would that do?
So what we're looking at there is that would actually help, equalize the whole dairy program. Currently the federal milk marketing orders are being reexamined, and there's quite a bit of talk, or what's going to happen most likely is that processors are probably going to get a larger make allowance. So that means that there's going to be more dollars that the consumer are paying that will go to the processors. But the farmers ultimately in the end are going to be receiving less for that 100 pounds of milk that we produce. And we've seen it every time that make allowances go up, farmers receive a smaller share of the consumer dollar. You know, for instance, back in the 80s, dairy farmers are receiving about 45 cents of every dollar that the consumer is spending. Today, we're only between 15 and 16 cents of that consumer dollar.
Oh, my God.
That's a crime. That's criminal.
How do they
Darren?
Justify such a drastic cut with everything, with prices raising over the past decades? How do they square like a 50% cut almost?
Well, it's more than 50% actually. So, you know, going from 45 down to 15, it's more like a 68% or 66% cut, something like that. But they justify it by saying that it's the stockholders and they got to make sure that they can continue to make sure that the stockholders are, you know, making that 15-20% profit. Meanwhile, we're seeing, you know, a farm and a half go out of business in the state of Wisconsin here every day. And, you know, ultimately it's going to come back to bite us, because when we get down to having one or two individuals or companies owning all the food production in this country, we are going to be in trouble.
Yes, absolutely. That is a terrible future. It really is. Do you have time to stay with us for a second segment, Darren?
I can, yes.
That would be great. And Tom is on the line. He has a question for you about the farm bill. We will take that when we return. We are talking to Darren Von Ruden. He is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and it's Farm Worker Appreciation Day. We're talking about the languishing farm bill, why it's important, and why our lawmakers, should do something. Do a job, maybe. Yeah. All right, stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
When you think about Labor Day and what it means, do you think about Wisconsin? You should, but let's go back to explain. In the mid-1800s, activists pushed for a day to recognize workers' contributions. President Grover Cleveland signed a law in 1894 making the first Monday of every September a national holiday. So where did the first labor union form in Wisconsin? Wausau? Green Bay, Milwaukee? The answer coming up. The Badger State has an impressive history, bricklayers and carpenters formed unions in the 1840s and were the first to push for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance. Now, did you guess? This all happened first in Milwaukee. The state's labor unions formed in 1847. The National Labor Union didn't form until 1866, 19 years later, leading the way for other states as this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, we have Jess on the board, in for Calvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, you can call, you can text at 855-752-4842, or leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, where our guest is Darren Van Ruden. The president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. It's Farm Worker Appreciation Day, and we're talking about the Farm Bill, which continues to sit without anything getting done on it in Washington. Tom from L.A. has been very patient with a question about the Farm Bill. Good morning, Tom. What did you want to ask?
Yeah, Derek, I have a quick question for you. I wanted to ask you, it's actually two questions, but one is how many family farms have disappeared because of CAFOs? And the second one is, isn't the Farm Bill also included with SNAP benefits or food assistance or otherwise known as food stamps for people, which do get 60 cents back on the dollar on the return on investment? A lot of people don't realize that, and I don't know if I'm being correct on that, so I wanted to be fact-checked on that myself.
Okay, Tom, thank you. Darren, can you respond to that?
Yeah, certainly, you know, with the first one, you know, just depending on when we go back to farm numbers, if you look at really when farms started getting larger and larger in the state and across the country was sometime in the early 80s or maybe even the 70s, we had well over 160,000 dairy farms across the country at that point in time. We're down under 30,000 dairy farms right now. So you could really say 130,000 farms have really been run out of business because of the monopolization that's going on in the dairy industry. The other question about the 66% of this new food stamp dollars, I'm not sure what that number is neither, so I won't comment on
sure,
that one.
Sure, that's fine. I hope that answers your questions, Tom. Thank you, Darren. That is a big concern, certainly the number of farms that we're losing. And you talked about this. It just seems like there's this constant encouragement to get bigger. I mean, Sonny Perdue in the previous administration, didn't he say something like, go big or go home?
Yeah, that was actually said at the World Dairy Expo back in 2019 or maybe 2018, one of those 2 years that when he was there to, welcome the folks from around the world to the World Dairy Expo. But the real question there too is looking at the food prices that we're paying today. And if these, large farms are going to make the system more efficient, why are we paying 2 to 3 times as much for dairy products today as what we were in 2020 or 2000, I should say, with those efficiencies, they should be keeping the price to the consumer down, and that just isn't happening. So, at some point in time, really got to look at what's going on there, and it's really the redistribution of dollars into fewer and fewer hands. So, we've got more and more people that are just working and not being able to realize that American dream of owning something. They're just the worker there that gets the job done, and most of the time aren't getting paid what they should be getting paid for the work that they do.
I just can't imagine you saying the World Dairy Expo, a gentleman standing on stage and making that sentiment. I'm sure there are people there who are going to clap their hands and be like, yes, we are on board. But I imagine a lot of the farmers that are there, like, this is not the message.
That's not, I mean, just continuing to grow, it cannot be ideal for everyone.
Right. You know, if all 130 dairy farmers that have went out of business in the last 2 to 3 decades were all getting to be 10,000 cow dairy operations, for one thing, there is enough animals out there for that. But then, you know, we'd be at $0 per hundredweight instead of the 16, 17 that we are, because we just have way too much product then at all at that time. So, you know, and that's part of what we're trying to do with the dairy revitalization plan too, is get a balance so that we can make sure that there's a safe, adequate supply of dairy products for the consumer out there, but also making sure that we have multiples of farmers that are providing that product versus getting down to fewer and fewer.
And I may be off base here, Darren, but I would think as well that it is, depending upon the conditions where they're kept, it's got to be a little bit better for the cows to be in smaller operations.
Well, certainly, you know, looking at our operation, we are organic too. So we pasture our cows throughout the, you know, pasturing season, which is really the end of April through maybe the end of October into November, just depending on the Wisconsin climate here. It seems like they're more comfortable out in that lush green pasture. A lot of the newer, bigger operations have went with sand bedding, which is, comfortable too. Certainly looking at all the people that lay on beaches around the countryside, it's a comfortable place to lay, but they're also walking on concrete all the time when they're going to get their feed and get milked. And with that sand between your feet and the concrete too, it certainly causes some issues. But looking at the overall process, certainly are some conveniences and comforts with some of the modern facilities, but you also have to look at the whole process, and not everything is comfortable there.
You mentioned the season for having the dairy, for having the cows out there. How is farming being affected now by the climate change, as well as if it is severe, does the farm bill have things in there to help the farmer, essentially?
Like conservation-wise.
Yep. Certainly conservation programs are, a huge thing that we need to see more dollars put into. Currently the House version is wanting to take some of those dollars that have been added through the Inflation Reduction Act. They want to take those dollars and put them into other avenues of the farm bill, which isn't right. We have conservation folks that are farmers that want to be a part of conservation programs, but can't because there's not funding. So it doesn't make sense to take funding away from programs that need more money. And, just looking at climate change, yes, with the storms that we had again last night here in Western Wisconsin and Southern Wisconsin, the corn and soybeans from the hilltop to the bottom of the hill, we see gullies all the time here in our neck of the woods because of those storms. And, when we had dairy farms around, there was every third strip or even every other strip was a alfalfa strip, which kept more soil in place. And, looking at what's happening now, certainly no-till is preventing a little bit of that, but not all of it. So, we just need to get back to some of those good conservation programs that were really started back in the 1930s here in Western Wisconsin that kept tons and tons of soil in place that are now being lost because we think we need to farm from fence row to fence row, when in reality, this country throws about 40% of our food supply away on a yearly basis. So we could actually, take some land out of production and still feed the world feed the country at least anyway, if we use smart common sense practices that allowed people to not only produce, but also have that safe food supply and an adequate food supply too.
Darren Von Ruden is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We are out of time, Darren. We would love to have you back. There's so much more to talk about. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so very much.
Yep, thank you, Jane and Greg.
News is coming up next, and then when we return, the best justice money can buy. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Plans to reroute part of Enbridge Energy's controversial Line 5 in northern Wisconsin are now in the hands of federal regulators. Enbridge aims to address environmental concerns. The tribe's lawyer is Gussie Lord. She says it's not enough.
This reroute is not a solution. It's a full solution to the danger of the current pipeline. In fact, it really extends the dangers of the pipeline and increases the threat of a devastating oil spill.
It's not clear when the Army Corps of Engineers will decide on the application. Six different hunting seasons are underway in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources says early seasons for Canada goose and teal, as well as mourning dove, rail, snipe, and common gallinule, all opened this weekend. The Canada goose population in Wisconsin is about 40% higher than average this year. This is Civic Media News. Abandoned farm fields could be the perfect place to generate wind or solar energy. Kathleen Shannon explains.
Roughly 30 million acres of croplands in the United States have been abandoned since the 1980s, according to a recent paper. Tyler Lark is one of the report authors from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says some of these lands have been restored to natural ecosystems. Others could be the answer to big questions the country is facing about where to house increasing renewable energy development.
We ideally want to avoid our best and most productive ag lands, but we also don't want to encroach pristine or native ecosystems. And so formerly cropped lands might hit that sweet spot in the middle.
Legislators have written bills to promote renewable energy development without threatening the country's richest soils. One example is the Protecting Future Farmland Act, introduced last September by U.S. Senators Tommy Baldwin and Chuck Grassley, which would facilitate what advocates call a smarter solar build-out. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're a celebrity, every summer is the summer to get drunk in the Hamptons and run off the road. But this is the summer to get caught doing so. First, it was Justin Timberlake, and now we'll add disgraced TV host Matt Lauer's daughter, Rami, to the list. Page Six reports that Rami, 20 years old and an avid equestrian, went off the road in the early morning hours of July 5th and fled the scene, but left a license plate behind. Someone should have told her that horses don't need license plates. The hat worn by Harrison Ford in the movie Indiana Jones Temple of Doom recently sold in an auction for $630,000. The hat was showcased early in the film when Jones and Short Round jumped from a plane about to crash. The high cost for the hat was much more than other celebrity items that were auctioned off, such as Justin Timberlake's French toast that went for just over $1,000 in 2000, or Scarlett Johansson's used tissue from The Tonight Show in 2008. True stories. Check them out.
For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weekdays from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be a really nice Labor Day today. Mostly sunny, 74 this afternoon. The wind out of the south at only around 5. Tonight, clear, 52. Tomorrow, sunshine, 76. Then on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high right around 80. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 67.
Everyone on the road is trying to make it to their destination safely. You can help by staying aware of the large trucks and buses around you. They take longer to stop, have large blind spots, and make wide turns that require caution from other drivers. It takes all of us working together to share the road safely. Learn more at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov. Paid for by FMCSA.
Travel back in time and experience the magic of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Journey through a world of armored knights, joking jesters, and enchanting fair maidens. Every weekend, August 17th through September 29th, thrill to live combat jousting, feasting on turkey legs, and shopping hundreds of unique artisans. Bring the whole family for unforgettable fun. Get your discounted tickets today at renaissancefest.com. Find your magic at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time for a special Labor Day edition of the show. We'll look back at Wisconsin history and Labor Day. Be with us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Matinair on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matinair, who is on vacation right now, and she'll be back in a couple weeks, but we're happy to have you here today. You're on a special day. It's Monday. It's Monday.
Yes, it's Monday.
I'm not kidding you. The first hour of this show, I thought it was Tuesday. I just realized it was Monday.
It is Monday.
Woofers. All right, well, it's Monday. It's and folks, I said it before, and I'll say it again. It is very hot out there. There's a heat advisory. It's about 83 degrees in Waukesha right now.
I just got the notification on my phone about a heat advisory.
And we're looking at dew points or high. We're looking at heat indexes in the upper 90s and into the hundreds. So what we're just saying is stay inside if you can. Please rest. Don't go outside and do work if
stay
you don't
hydrated.
Have to. Stay hydrated.
Check on your neighbors, especially if they're elderly, if they need anything. Like this, again, this is what Midwest folks do. We check on our people.
Yep. And keep your pets inside too. Yes. Don't let your dog run around. It's too hot for them to be outside. I don't care if you're like, oh, he likes it. Nope.
It's too hot for me to be outside.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, yes. But yeah, you can call or text. Same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Be part of the conversation. But right now I want to talk about something that, you know, we were talking about BLOC, mm-hmm. Black Leaders Organized in Our Communities. We were talking about voting, talking about all sorts of things. But one of the things that is in your universe, is part of your existence, Miss Angela Lang, who, by the way, is our guest co-host today because she is the executive director of BLOC.
Yes.
Your involvement, your working in the unions.
Yeah.
We're coming up on Labor Day.
Yes.
And that's, we're going to have our cookouts. We're going to have our mattress sales, but we want to talk about the importance of unions. And I feel like in the past few years, the union movement has really flipped the narrative.
Yes.
In America, and it's shown the importance at all different levels. So if you can give us a little background on your experience in the unions.
So once upon a time, my first job out of college, you know, as one does, you're like, I'm looking for jobs. Who do I have a relationship with where I've maybe done some work and see if they have some openings? And I had been volunteering on the Fight for 15. And this was in 2012, 2013 era. Wow, a long time ago. And that was when the Fight for 15 really started taking off. Yeah. Fast food workers walking out demanding $15 an hour, which by today's norms is like way under.
Oh, yeah.
It's not kept up. But at the time, $15 an hour as a minimum wage felt like radical and like ridiculous. But I remember volunteering and I started kind of helping out a little bit more. And so I applied for a job and I applied for a different organization, not knowing their relationship to SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. And they're like, we don't have any openings, but we gave your application to SEIU. And I was like, okay.
Is that legal?
And I was like, sure. And then I get a call from Bruce Colburn.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right. You know, you could tell. He's like, all right, I see you come out of student organizing. And I did. I came out of student organizing. I was doing a lot of nonpartisan stuff until Scott Walker was elected. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to go protest in Madison. I didn't have a car. I don't have money. And I remember getting connected to AFSCME on campus.
Yes.
And they were like, well, we have the resources to buy for a bus. Can you fill it with students? And that was the extent of what I knew about the labor movement, was working with AFSCME in this like Scott Walker, you know, budget repair bill, collective bargaining fight. And so when Bruce called me, I was like, sure, that's not what I applied for, but okay. And I go in for an interview and I remember having this conversation. I was like, listen, I'm not a union organizer. I have very limited experience in union matters, but I'm a organizer. And if you take a chance on me and teaching me the union side, I think this could translate. And he took a chance on me. And my job at the time as an organizer was to help out with things like the Fight for 15. And I remember working with David Bowen when he was at the county about passing a livable wage ordinance over there. That's how long ago it was. But my job really entailed doing house visits with folks that, you know, we wanted to sign up for the union or we wanted them involved in some sort of way. So the goal is to have this like 7-point conversation to try and get someone to join a union. And it was very interesting through those conversations how people saw themselves political or not. And that really stuck with me. So I was largely working with home care workers and CNAs and nursing homes, which are largely Black women. And we had a 45-minute conversation about how childcare should be free or how we should raise the minimum wage. And then when it got to the end of the script, when I was trying to make the ask of like, hey, can you donate to our PAC? they would say that they're not political. And yeah. I was like, but you are by the conversation. And so that really was interesting of like people's relationship to power and access to politics and how they view themselves in it. And I think Black women just by merely existing are political in a lot of different ways. And so it was interesting. And that actually formed a lot of, you know, a lot of kind of lessons and learning that I still bring today to Block.
You know, I think that one of the things, and as I said earlier, I feel like the union movement has flipped the narrative.
Yeah.
To a more accepting, and by the way, the idea of a $15 minimum wage, which I feel like we're still fighting for today, is adorable, right? Because it should be like $20-$23 an hour, which I'm sure some people listening right now are going, what?
Well, if it kept up with inflation, it'd be in that range.
Oh my gosh. And the arguments of, well, if they just, you know, that's, those are jobs that you're not going to keep for the rest of your life. Well, why not? I mean, what if someone really likes working at a fast food joint? They find their calling and their enjoyment out of that.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have to work another job to do it. And
exactly.
It's not out of the realm that a billion-dollar corporation could afford to pay their people more.
Yes.
But that's for another conversation. The union has really flipped the narrative, because I feel like even 10, 15 years ago, to say union was almost a dirty word.
Yes.
It was a divisive word. It ignited conversation. And it had the star-spangling awesome Freedomites shaking their fists in the air saying, well, if you don't like it, then quit the job. Or if this, you know, it only, like one of the things that we can talk about, this is the myths versus the truths.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the, I always heard is unions protect the lazy. And I know that's not to be true.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. I mean, that's just not how unions operate. That
yeah.
Structure would work under that kind of
right.
model. But
right.
in your union organizing, which has now led to your just community organizing mm-hmm. work, how have you helped flip that narrative? How have you changed minds to make people say, oh, no, these are very important?
Yeah. I mean, one, I think it's important to know kind of like the timeline. And I just looked up what year this was because, again, I don't know time. I think the first time we started having these conversations about union and class in a very real way was during Occupy Wall Street.
Okay.
And that was in 2011. And, you know, that everybody was talking about the 99% versus the 1%, which I think is incredibly important. But then also, at the same time, it raised people's consciousness, but then it kind of went away. And then you had like Bernie Sanders raise consciousness, and then like he wasn't elected. But like there has been kind of this class conversation, I think, the last few years. And it's interesting because like when we used to get the union just protects lazy workers, or like they don't actually do anything, they just take your money and don't do anything, I would be like, if you got fired from your job right now, whether you did something bad or good, don't you think you deserve to have your day in court? Metaphorically speaking,
yeah,
right. And the union, like, it's the same thing, is that you should be able to have representation against management, especially if they're like a corporation or they're getting all this profit off of your labor. You deserve to have your day in court about your actions on the job. And the union doesn't save every single person, it just allows you to have representation. And so in a way, it's kind of like if you get locked up and you're like, I can't afford a lawyer, well, everybody is entitled to, you know, their say in court. You may be provided a public defender, for example, mm-hmm. right? And so I think of it in that way of like, if we understand how the 1% or the man or, you know, management is actually, you know, stealing and extracting our labor without getting anything for it, and basically treating folks with terrible working conditions, the union allows for that space for people to come together, because it's not just you and your union rep. It is your union fighting behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, if, you know, it was a wrongful termination, you get your job back. But then also it shows the strength of what a union can do. And it makes the whole work site more, I think, cohesive. And I think it also makes them stronger together, because if people know, oh, as a manager, I can't get away with treating my workers like this because the union has, you know, 50 plus deep just on this floor alone, you're going to start to change how you treat your own workers.
You know, one of the things it sounds like to me, and this is a conversation I've had with other people when it comes to certain social programs like universal healthcare.
Yeah.
When you look at the topic of universal healthcare, one of the things I always find in Europe, and every structure has their problems, and you can talk about the problem with universal healthcare in European countries, but there's a morale.
Yeah.
That happens within these countries saying, I know my country takes care of me.
Yes. Yes.
You know, my kid can go to college for an affordable price. Mm-hmm. I have free health care. You know, the list goes on. When there is a give and take and it benefits the people, a morale builds.
Yeah.
A positive thing builds. And it almost seems to me that, you know, if you have a good union, the morale you're going to have as a worker, you'll be like, I know that I'm going to work hard. And if something goes wrong, I have someone standing behind me. And crazy idea, crazy notion, Angela. I'm breaking ground here, Calvin. If you are a business owner whose shop is a union shop and you are not, you know, trying to bilk everything to make the bottom line bigger and bigger and bigger, it makes you want to run a better shop too, because you want to have a good relationship with the union, a good relationship with your workers, because you are a good boss or you're part of a good management team.
Yeah.
So it seems like to me, a non-union person, it benefits everyone
exactly
to have this in place.
Exactly. And I think what's so interesting, I think it boils down to, as like during my union organizing, you know, there would be these like mandatory, what we'd call like captive audience meetings where they would mandate all the staff, whether it's during their shift or they make them come in separately. They often paid them, but they were mandatory sessions where they would just show union busting videos or whatever. And it's like, if we don't even get into the weeds of like the contract negotiations, what folks are fighting for, don't you see it's a problem when management doesn't even want their employees to talk together and to organize? Mm-hmm. Like, if they don't even want you building relationships and they're trying to do this divide and conquer, which we've all seen, Scott Walker, Diane Hendricks, you know, divide and conquer.
Oh my gosh, it's literally their tactics.
Yeah. And so if they say, we don't want you all organizing against the 1%, hopefully that's enough critical thinking to be like, what are you doing if like I can't even talk to my colleagues and try to organize for better working conditions?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, absolutely right. That video, like, it's like 15, 20 seconds.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And it's infuriating to watch because it's just like watching two, you know, comic book villains like talking like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, I have experience there, what you're talking about. Like I worked at a video store that is no longer business. I won't say its name. It does rhyme with Schmockbuster, but they set us down and they played, you know, all of it, the sexual harassment video, but they also played this video that was, you know, here at Schmockbuster, we don't feel it's necessary to have a third party involved in conversations. It should be okay to talk to your manager. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't disagree with that either.
Sure.
In a perfect world.
Yes.
But my manager also sucked.
Exactly.
So I didn't want to talk to her. And I've seen other videos, and it's always built in this beautiful, like, hey guys,
we're just a family.
Hey, Angela, can we just wrap here?
Yeah.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk right now?
If you had an issue, why do you need to bring in someone else? Why can't we just talk?
You can call me by my phone. Call me Rick. I mean, it's really, really. I've never been in a union. I've worked in union houses, but for some reason I was a non-rev employee. But I've watched the unions be strong and watched the unions fight for their employees. On the other side of not being in unions and working for like corporations, you've seen these videos saying, we don't need that. And you're like, no, you're afraid of that, because you know if it comes in, you're going to have to pay us more or give it, you know, it's when you tell us we don't need one, my first thought was like, why, how is that going to harm you? And once again, your bottom line, folks, if you are part of a union, if you've been in a union, you want to talk about your experience, honestly, good, bad, or indifferent, we understand it's not the same for everybody, but we feel like, you know, Labor Day is coming up. We want to talk about it. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Let us know. Call, text, leave a comment on the live stream. We're going to keep the union conversation going with Angela Lang, our guest host for today. Don't go anywhere. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
November 21st, 2021, the Waukesha Christmas Parade attack, a holiday celebration turned deadly. Daryl Brooks drove his SUV into the Waukesha crowd, targeting as many people as possible. Brooks injured dozens and killed six, including an eight-year-old child. It never should have happened. Just days earlier, Brooks was arrested for trying to run over his girlfriend, but he was released on just $1,000 bail. Senator Tammy Baldwin voted against increased funding for pretrial detention of violent criminals like Daryl Brooks, making it easier for these criminals to terrorize our communities. Call Senator Baldwin, 608-264-5338. Urge her to support S-3919, the Keep Violent Criminals Off Our Streets Act. Because violent criminals belong behind bars. Paid for by One Nation, www.onenationamerica.org.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Matinair on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I'm filling in for Jane Matinair, who is on vacation. She'll be back in 2 weeks, but we have a great show for you today so far. The wonderful, the talented, the award-winning Angela Lang, the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing, our community is also known as BLOCK, is our co-host today. You'll be back next week, too.
Yeah.
I believe we talked about...
It's on my calendar.
I think it's next Tuesday, but regardless,
you're
going to be back.
You're going to hear me.
That's right. And you actually, we hear you a lot. You're on Civic Media a lot.
Yeah, so. I think I also have some other stuff for someone else as well for Civic Media.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Matt Rothschild is also filling in again. So
excellent. Well, yeah, we love having you around because you're fun.
Thank you.
And you are...
It's a good time.
Yeah, it's unabashed.
This is why I will drive to Waukesha for you all.
Aw. Well, we were talking about unions as Angela was in SEIU,
yep.
Which is the Service
Employees International Union. The purple ones.
The purple ones, yes. Purples. They have wonderful purple shirts.
It's my favorite color, so yeah. I wasn't mad at it.
I wouldn't mind a nice forest green.
I mean, so AFSCME is green, but it's it's like a different green. Yeah. It's not a forest green. And no. I hate green, but I the two shirts that I have the most for like sleeping or whatever, I've pulled out an Obama Biden t-shirt from SEIU. I was like, I wouldn't even work at SEIU at the time. I think I just found it in the closet and stole it. Same with AFSCME shirts. Union shirts are union made and are thus the most comfortable to sleep in.
You heard it here first, folks. Folks, if you have experience with the unions, whether you're in a union, you were in a union, you want to talk about the greatness of unions, or honestly, we're not going to tell you what you can and can't say as far as, you know, content, but if you had a not so great experience, we want to hear from you because we believe in unions here are important. We want to tout them. We want to build them up. Call us 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can also text us at the same number. You can leave a comment on the live stream. We are on YouTube. We are on the old Twitter. Ye old Twitter. That's what I start calling it.
Ye old Twitter.
As well like as Facebook. And yeah, we just want to hear from you and let know. Bob from Waukesha is calling in. Bob, what say you?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm retired. I'm a retired Teamster. I put 33 years in with Local 200
nice.
In Milwaukee.
Nice.
And my son had asthma and he had it pretty bad. And I don't know how many times at night we'd have to go to Children's Hospital with him. And never, never received a bill.
Mm.
We have our own clinic on 62nd and Blue Mound, where the Union Hall is, dental and health. When I was, now this is years ago, it was $2 to see the dentist and get your tooth filled or your teeth cleaned or whatever. No, it was $3, I think. And then it was $2 for a prescription. We had our own pharmacy. And right now, I retired and when I was 54 years old, I have a beautiful pension, plus my Social Security, and I'm living my elderly days the way a person should live it. Mm-hmm. And all these people that are against unions and the right to work law, you know, I get a kick out of people when you talk to them about a union. oh, I don't want to pay dues. They don't realize how much you get for those dues. And another thing, it used to be when a place was organized and voted for union, they would negotiate with the employer. And if they couldn't reach an agreement, it went to arbitration. Yeah. Well, under Trump, they took that away. There's no more arbitration. So there's different non-union trucking companies and non-union businesses that have voted to go union, and they can't get a contract because the employer refuses to negotiate.
Mm. Bob, thank you so much for calling and telling that story. Yeah. Seriously, those are the things we need to hear.
Yeah.
My father was also a union truck driver when I was growing up. And yeah, I mean, that connects to what we were saying earlier, is that you have this entity that's here for you to advocate for you.
Yeah.
To make sure that you don't have, I mean, I don't know about not paying any hospital bills, but making sure that they're affordable.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what you went through, Bob, with your child.
Yeah.
And my heart goes out to you. And, then inflames my brain to listen to people talk about, and this goes by the notion of like right to work. What an insidious and horribly named idea.
It was right a fun time working for a labor union in Wisconsin during the right to work fight. Yeah. That was a good time.
Yeah. I mean, trying to paint it as this idea of like, well, you have the right to work and you're going to shake your fist for these blue denim of truth Americans who think that, you know, a hard work and a hardy attitude is all you need. No, you need people on your side. And that's what the unions do. And that's what, Angela, that's what you did as part of it. And, you know, I wasn't part of that union, but I thank you for being a part of that. I know that, I'll be totally honest, when I was younger, had an idea of unions, not based in any sort of real fact. I was a child.
Yeah.
But I listened to what people say, and they weren't always the best things.
Yeah.
It has evolved over the past 15, 20 years, and I've seen the people talk about it.
Yeah.
And the passion they have for it.
Yes.
You're talking about it, and all the work that you do, Angela, it's wonderful. And I think we need more of it. And they need to get deeper and advocate for more workers. And
yeah.
Bob, I thank you again for sharing your story. So
I've shared this off air, but like, I think Bob's story, it got me thinking more about it. So I worked for a labor union, but I didn't grow up in a union household. And I think there's an assumption that if you work for a labor union, that you have deep, deep, deep labor roots. And as I mentioned before, mine didn't start until college. Yeah. Right. But I understand though. So I talk about this a lot. You know, I was raised by a single white mother, trying to figure out not only how to raise a black child in a city she was unfamiliar with, but when I was in the seventh grade, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. And so what does it mean for her to go to chemotherapy every Tuesday and couldn't afford to take off of work and still had to catch that shift at Walgreens because she didn't have union representation?
Well, we're going to keep that conversation going throughout the week. And when we have you back, we'll probably talk some more union talk.
Yeah, I'd love to.
But you're going to be back next week, I believe Tuesday, but if not, I'll clarify that. But for now, we got to take off. We got to get going. We got to make way for Todd Elba, who'll be showing up at noon to 2. Stick around for the Todd Elba Show. We thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for commenting, texting, and calling. Couldn't do without you. Calvin, thank you for doing what you do. Shout out, Calvin. Thank you, Angela, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And stick around to the Civic Media Radio Network. This has been Matt and Aaron Iyer. Have a wonderful day. Stay hydrated.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Maggie Dawn.
Next up for Maggie and the Millionaires, we'll be talking with Saru Jayaraman. We'll also check in with Dr. Ben Weston, medical advisor to Milwaukee County, and Chef Adam Pavlov.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. The Todd Elba Show.
Co-founder of the Lincoln Project, Rick Wilson.
Trump is now pre-gaming for Republican elections boards at the county and state levels across this country to try to put their thumb on the scale for Trump. And if they don't win on that front, they may resort to violence again, which is why at the Lincoln Project, our goal is not to beat Trump. Our goal is to beat Trump like a rented mule. Our goal is to beat Trump so bad that his bruises have bruises.
The Todd Elba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.